I'm really pleased to reintroduce you all to Joe Mills. Joe Mills has degrees from multiple universities. In literature from the University of Chicago, University of New Mexico, and University of California, Davis, where I got to know him when we were both graduate students at the same time. When he was working on his third degree, his mother asked him, "Don't you know that stuff yet?" It's a good question. It's a lifelong question. Faculty member at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, which is a job that he got right out of graduate school. He holds the Susan Burris Walt Distinguished Professorship in the Humanities. His published work includes poetry, fiction, drama, and criticism. He's published 4 volumes of poetry with Press 53, including Sending Christmas Cards to Huck and Hamlet, Angels, Thieves, and Winemakers, Somewhere During the Spin Cycle, and Love and Other Collisions. Joe and his wife Danielle Tarmy are the authors of A Guide to North Carolina's Wineries from John F. Blair Publisher. The second edition was released in 2007. When he was here, he was a graduate student, and we were seeing Kings games and playing video games down at the MU, and now his books are coming out in second editions. He's made it in the big time, but he's made time also to come back here and join us for this occasional tradition of a pre-Thanksgiving poem from Joe Mills. Joe, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Well, thank you for having me back, Andy. Happy Thanksgiving Eve.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving Eve to you. What's your Thanksgiving tradition with you and the kids?
Well, our Thanksgiving tradition is usually we kind of hole up. I don't like to travel that much on Thanksgiving weekend. And we cook. We cook for a lot of the weekend. And we make a big, I always pronounce the name wrong, kubliak, something like that. It's this huge, like, Russian pastry, vegetarian, but it's enormous. So it makes us feel like we're really, you know, making something big.
That sounds great. We're making a relatively big meal for us. We've got, speaking of Chicago, my wife Kate's dad and stepmom driving down from Chicago, arriving at dawn tomorrow. And we're going to feed them, entertain their dog with our dog, and take long walks. It'll be fun.
That sounds terrific.
Yeah. Good. So tell me about Susan Burris Wall. Who is this person who has endowed your distinguished professorship in the humanities? And isn't that a big deal?
Yeah, it is a big deal. Not for me necessarily, but for the school it was a big deal. It was the first endowed chair that our division got, the Academic Division of Liberal Arts. And it was endowed in her name. Her brother made the donation for her. So it was like a $1 million donation, and they endowed the chair, and I have been the first recipient of it, which is great.
That's terrific. I think rich people out there should consider what they might do with $1 million and how much, like, learning and creativity and inspiration and transformational lectures and English classes could result with the right sort of gift to the right sort of university.
Sure. And look at what was it, Poetry Magazine, that got that enormous $100 million gift or something like that.
That's right, from the Eli Lilly folks, I think it was.
And could have gone out and made a lot of money and then made these donations ourselves.
Yeah. So exactly. You can make all the money, you know, and it's hard to make money in the world of poetry, so you might do something else with your life. And then remember poetry and creative writing and English departments and writing programs thereafter.
Yeah.
So tell me, pretend that I don't know about some of the paths that your life has taken since you left UC Davis, because you've been teaching classes for a long time, and I hope you'll say something about the North Carolina School for the Arts. You've also been publishing in all of these different genres. Some people might say that you're trying to do too much, but obviously you love it, or else you wouldn't keep coming out with one of these books every 2 years or so.
Well, I don't think I'm trying to do too much. Quite the contrary. It's like, oh, man, I can't get enough done. But I have kind of been publishing steadily, and that's good. I mean, that's the nice thing about poetry is you can keep kind of working on it and and developing it a lot over time. So I think it was John McPhee said, you know, you put an ounce in the bucket every day, and pretty soon that bucket fills up. So I've been, I think, really lucky to have a great publisher. Kevin Watson at Press 53 is so supportive of particularly literary fiction and poetry. He concentrates only on short stories and poetry, and he has been fabulous. So I've been lucky in that sense. And
that's also a nearby press for you, right?
It's at what?
It's a nearby press, and so you get to attend events right there.
In North Carolina, and that was kind of almost by chance, although I knew the first one of his first kind of people that he published. I went to the reading, and that's where I discovered the press, and he just celebrated his 100th title that he's released.
That's incredible.
And he's released the kind of North Carolina Poet Laureates and the South Carolina Poet Laureates. There's a wonderful writer named John Ely that he's brought back into print. And so it's been a real honor to be associated with that press.
Good, good. And that's Press 53. Is that their website, press53.com?
Press53.com.
Excellent. Well, I was asking this of some of my earlier guests this afternoon, and so I'll ask you too. What, with your prodigious publishing record over the last decade, what is your relationship with technology? And do you find that overall the different technologies that you use as a writer, that they've made you more or less productive?
I think they've definitely made me more productive. I just got, this was last Christmas, but my family bought me an iPad. And I was like, an iPad? I don't know if I want an iPad. It's like magic. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. And I got one from the school, too, so I've been using those a lot. Now, I don't actually write much on it. I find it invaluable in the classroom and to show photographs and visuals and all of that. But I don't actually write too much on it. But one of the amazing things about the technology, I think, is I was walking to work the other day, and I just had this kind of phrase pop into my head. Didn't know where it came from. I suddenly realized, wait, that could really solve a problem with a poem that I abandoned like 5 years ago. Never got the poem right, just left it. Well, it turns out, you know, with hard drives and thumb drives and all of this, I could easily search for that poem, find it like in seconds, literally, and start to work on it, which is astounding. The access that you have, and I'm constantly looking up, you know, I use Google to basically look up words and what does that really mean and that kind of thing. It really has changed the way I've worked. I explain to my students sometimes I was the generation that started on typewriters and in college, you know, switched over to computers. But we had no idea of how powerful they would become as far as accessing information, so including our own information, you know, the content that we've generated over a 20-year career that we forget about. So,
absolutely. Well, I'm glad that that's worked for you. I certainly love my iPad, and I think, as you were saying with regard to photographs, iPads and other technologies make us think anew about the variety of media that can inform our writing, whether it's images or film or audio, music. I write too, and with jazz from time to time, for example. And I think that that's made my writing life richer and more interesting. And you've written about film as well. Film has come up in your poetry from time to time, hasn't it?
Yeah, film comes up in my poetry from time to time. I edited a book on a film criticism on the Marx Brothers called 100 Year of the Marx Brothers. And that really kind of influenced my work. That's amazing. You know, YouTube, and as far as the access we have to film and to images and to moving images, again, it's astounding. You can call up, you know, outtakes from a film from the 1930s and have access to that in a way that was never available before. And so that really lets, I think, if you are inclined to do this, you know, that offers wonderful opportunities. The flip side of that is, again, my students have more access to information than any other generation ever, and many of them, unfortunately, just don't take advantage of it. They do less research. They do less kind of really looking to develop kind of deep ways of thinking and probing a subject than ever before. It's very superficial, and that's some of them. But for the other ones, it's an amazing tool.
Absolutely. Well, we're chatting with Joe Mills this afternoon. He is a professor, and aren't you still a dean over there at North Carolina School of the Arts?
Oh, no, I'm not. I never wanted to be dean, and I was offered an assistant dean. This was several years ago. It's like, you totally don't want me to do that. That is not my area of expertise, because I don't like the phone. So do you want a dean who's never going to answer the phone?
No, probably not. That wouldn't be so effective. Plus, one thing I've learned from Animal House and many other films is that deans are often antagonists to the lives of students and faculty alike. And who wants that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I was on our search. I'm on a ton of search committees. This is the weird thing, too, about kind of getting older and having a career. And I was on the search committee for the dean that we recently hired, and on the search committee for the provost and all that. And my one question I kept wanting to ask them is, why would you want to do this job? I mean, everybody's problem is in your inbox. It's like, and nobody's going to be happy with how you solve these problems.
Right. So. It's funny, this idea of power and how and why people would want to yield it. This new film, Lincoln, takes this on. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
No, I haven't. I really want to. But
well, I think you and the rest of America will see it over Thanksgiving break or in this coming month, and I'll be curious to know what you think of it. And so what sort of writing projects have filled your days in recent weeks?
Recently, I just finished a first draft, finally, of a play that has been in my head for a long time. So I'm excited about that. I don't know what will happen with it. It may end up just in a drawer. And I'm working on my fifth book of poetry, or at least something that will eventually be that. In other words, I'm working on poems in a particular kind of subject matter. And some essays.
Excellent.
I really decided to work on some kind of personal essays.
Well, Joe Mills, speaking of poetry, why don't you share with a poem with us before the end of our pre-Thanksgiving show?
All right. This poem is called Ode. It's kind of my Thanksgiving tribute in a way. You know, I said there was many things I wasn't going to do. I wasn't going to have a family or get married or a house or any of those things. And it turns out those are all pretty great. I was also never going to write poetry about writing poetry. And I, once again, never say never, find myself doing some of these. So this appeared in my last book, Sending Christmas Cards to Huck and Hamlet. It's called Ode. He says compose an ode, a praise song to something ordinary. And I decide to first write down possible subjects. Coffee, donuts, the morning air, the smell of onions and butter frying, the purple hyacinths by the garage, the jeans with the holes in the knee. And I add to the list as I walk around the house, the neighborhood, the day, until I filled my notebook, so I buy another. And the first thing I write in it is new notebooks and old cashiers who call you honey. And I fill that one, then another, and the sun descends, and I put that in. That takes dozens of pages, as the light seems to change everything, and the sun itself changes as it dissolves against the horizon. Then the gloaming and the thickening darkness. Then the glowing of houses, blue windows, bike lights, fireflies, stars, and smelling somebody's pipe and wood smoke, and hearing voices and cheers from the nearby ball field and someone's guitar and drinking wine that was given to you by a friend and sitting on a screen porch, swinging a pen back and forth, noting as much as you can and trying to get some of it down, just some of it, before it's too late.
That's great. And that was called Ode?
That was called Ode. You know, I think it was Mark Strand who said he writes poetry to prove he was paying attention. And it's just kind of paying attention to all the things around you in your daily life.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you shared it with us, Joe. And I'm glad that you could join us today on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I hope that you'll let me know when your next book comes out. Do you aim for a book every 2 years?
No, I don't. That has been kind of what has happened. I aim for a book every time I feel like I have enough of a manuscript that I'm happy with, that I want to be in print for a while. One of the things that I learned a long time ago, it's not enough to publish. You actually want to publish things that you're proud of, that you want people to see.
Right.
So, but it's been happening about every 2 years. So.
Excellent. Good for you. Well, Joe, it's always a pleasure to catch up, and I'll keep following you in various media, including on josephrobertmills.com. where we can see a picture of you and find out more about you and your prodigious publishing in multiple media. Thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Absolutely. Take care, Joe.
Happy Thanksgiving.
To you too. Bye-bye.